Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Breaks a tackle, watch out! Burst of speed! Look at this freshman!
Welcome to the home of professional football, Canton, Ohio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the College to Canton podcast, the perfect show for any and every college football and NFL fan. I'm your host, Travis May, and you can find me on Twitter at @FF_TravisM and Titan Travis on Clubhouse. If you're joining us for the first time, College to Canton is a show about the journey of the best football players and prospects from being a college football recruit to their actual college career, to the NFL draft, to their entire NFL career, and the discussion as to whether they should even be in consideration for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We always talk some fantasy football since this is a RotoViz Radio podcast, but we always make sure to dive into some real college football and NFL analysis too. And Stefan is actually out in the wild somewhere where service is very spotty. So he's got the week off, but he'll be back very soon. And like I said before, we are going to go to a 2-episode-a-week format here very soon, kicking things off that way in August. So expect more content from the College of Canton feed here very soon. But tonight I have a very special guest coming on the show. You may recognize his name. If you follow him on Twitter or if you've listened to the show for very long, this is his third time coming on. But I am joined by a very good friend, Peter Howard, at PA Howdy on Twitter. Dynasty League Football does work there. Dynasty Crossroads Podcast. You can find him on YouTube, Peter Howard or PA Howdy there, or the link that is actually on his Twitter bio. And then you can also find his Patreon at patreon.com/PA Howard, that's a lot of information, but welcome to the show. Peter, how you doing, man?
Hey, yeah, you can just find me on Twitter. Like, that's basically it.
At PA Howdy.
It's real easy to remember.
Basically.
The name's so bad, no one else is claiming it, so I'm pretty much all on my own there. You get close, you'll find me.
Perfect.
Yeah, and I just, because you're actually a good podcaster, you probably have listeners. I literally just got in from work. That's the state of mind I'm in. I'm currently staring at 7 spreadsheets, wondering why I had them open. And happy to be talking to you again, Travis.
Nice you know, you, that sounds like my computer at all times. I think when I go to bed at night, I actually see the Excel spreadsheet lines.
I have literally had, that's when I know I've gone too far.
Yep, exactly.
I need a break.
Absolutely. But that's where the nerds live. That's where we live, everybody. So we love our spreadsheets. We love our numbers. And that's why I love having Peter on, because he digs into the numbers. He has a fantastic database when it comes to NFL prospects and college players and their production. And every year, or at least maybe a couple times a year, I like to have a conversation with somebody like Peter who, you dive into the numbers deeper than most anybody when it comes to what actually leads to future NFL success for wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, quarterbacks. And I know you and I probably have spent the most time on wide receivers, but I think you and I both are at the same time trying to get better at other positions. And so tonight on the show, we are going to get into the nitty-gritty with some of the numbers, but then actually practically apply these numbers. Not just talk about the titles and the percentages and thresholds we look for, but actually try to make some decisions between player A and player B and what that looks like in our kind of prospecting process for NFL draft season and even trying to project a player's breakout in the NFL in first year and beyond. So yeah, we'll get into that here soon. But Peter, I did want to kick things off with a pretty fun segment though, because you and I mean, we've known each other for quite some time, but we're in a bunch of different group chats together, and you have this propensity, habit of fat thumbing words and misspelling things, and then you know, John Bosch or somebody else would come in and translate. This is actually what he said.
Yeah. I think Zach Reed, Dynasty Dummies, has got a literal meme of, you know, the Pierre Howdy to English translation book. So yeah, it's not a secret at this point. I'm not a particularly strong speller, and I'm an even worse typer. So.
Well, I wanted to kick things off because I know you don't live in the college football space very much. And this whole idea sparked from a conversation, thanks very much in part to our buddy Ryan McDowell, that I think
Ryan's
most people...
Ryan's always there to, you know, make sure people know I'm terrible.
Encourage you and me. And so wanted to kick off the show with a segment where we get you to spell different names of incoming true freshmen in college. Because why not, right? I mean, like, because these are players that, in fact, I posted something about, you know, the average draft position of some of these true freshmen, and you were like, yeah, these names are all made up. I don't believe you. So, like, these are not real people. Like, even before we clicked record, you're like, how many more years until these guys are real people? Is that, like, that's...
Yeah. It's part of a bit I used to have that no one ever picked up on, so I should really quit it. But it was the idea I pretended no one existed until they were eligible. Like, okay. I didn't care until they're not, like, being drafted.
If they're not draft eligible, they don't count.
Yeah, pretty much, because college football's a myth.
Believe it or not.
Mainly just to save myself. Like you said, I spent way too much time on this already. If I start digging into college, I like to sleep occasionally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't do that very much. But college football,
I imagine, man. You're in different sports at this point. You've given sleep up, I imagine.
Yep, exactly. And I'm going to have my first kid later this year, so I just won't actually sleep anymore here very, very soon. So this
quite literally.
Yes, but let's kick it off. So I guess I'm going to call this the College Football Freshman Spelling Bee with Peter Howard. So we're just going to go down the list of some of the, I guess, best bets of true freshmen to have an impact, not only in college, but to go on and be future pro playmakers. All of these players have been the top 25 incoming freshmen off of the board in all of my College to Canton drafts or Debbie drafts this spring, where we can roster college players on our team before they become real people. And so, yeah. See what I did there? I just did your bit.
But, I did. I'm better than me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
But all right, first question, first word or first name here. And this is somebody who is really, by many people's consensus, the number one recruit and number one prospect in the entire freshman class coming into college this year. So I want you to spell his... let's really just the first name, because the last name you'd get right. So Trevion Henderson. Trevion Henderson. Can you spell Trevion correctly?
I'm trying to find how I'd spell it on Twitter. Let's see. Trevion.
Yeah, okay.
I'm very phonetic, okay? Like,
yeah.
You ready? I'm
ready.
I just want to say more podcasts I go on should be all about how I'm terrible. Like, I like whole premise. Let's bring Pierre Howdy on, embarrass him in his weakness.
No, like, it's not about how you're terrible. It's just a fun game.
I spell it Trebion.
Don't! By the way, did you
I'm
hear
not
that?
I'm going to get any of them right.
Did you hear that that little sound drop I dropped in there?
I did. It was very professional.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's so, a Homer Simpson dough, if I remember. If
for like the three of you that probably don't follow Peter on Twitter already, he's had some variation of Homer Simpson on his avatar, right? I mean, for a while, right? I mean, how
yeah, I actually feel pretty naked right now. I've changed my avatar for like, I change it for the Scott Fishbowl, at least to start with. About halfway through the year, I usually give up and go back just to my Homer Simpson trying to do math on a chalkboard gif. Zach Reed, again from the Dynasty Dummies, it's like me and him love each other or something.
Yeah,
he's something very like good at film. Don't tell him I said that.
Yeah.
He made me a Scott Fishbowl avatar because I applied to the Avi makers, the Scott Fishbowl Avi makers who have done wonders for charity, and they're amazing people, but I hate them because one of them's my former co-host, and like I paid money, right? Like hard-earned money for an avatar, but Jake is one of the guys, and I think that's why I never get one. He's like, nah, he won't complain. It's
Jake
fine.
Anderson.
Shout out. And so Zach made me one, and it's awesome. So I put that one up there, and it's actually Bart Simpson. Like in the affect of one of the Nirvana covers, because that's the division I'm in. But sorry, I didn't mean to make that into a story. I know you're trying to get back onto making me.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But I had a special Homer Simpson soundboard here for you. So we'll have some drops when you misspell or especially some names tonight. So that
you'll probably only need the one, but yeah, let's
go. That dough was for the misspelling of Trevion Henderson. It's T-R-E-V, rather. See, I can't even get it. T-R-E-V-E-Y-O-N.
Yeah, Trevion. I was never going to get that. Yeah. It's a Y's. You know the Y? Sometimes I guess I throw one in there.
Yeah.
Like there's a backup running back I kind of liked from college behind Joe Mixon, and his name's Trevion, right? And I know there's a Trevion. Y in there, so I'll just throw it in randomly and hope to hit the right spot.
So Trevion, so Trevion actually played for A&M, but... You know, Samaje Perine was there with Mick. You know, I can't remember what class he was in, but Trevion Williams, he was kind of a bust. But you actually still like him, don't you? Oh, wait, now he's behind Joe Mixon. Now I understand what you're saying. Yes.
I think Bengals. He was drafted behind him. But
I was thinking college. My brain's just, you know, backwards.
I think even you said he was drafted a little lower than you'd expect.
Oh,
I mean, running backs and production. Because we're actually going to get into some of that stuff you mentioned is weird. And Trevion Williams and those kind are some of it. Like, I know he looked to be a pretty good college back. He went behind Joe Mixon, who's been disappointing and injured. And sorry, didn't mean to get too far.
No, but Trevion is now with the Bengals, of course, behind Joe Mixon. So Trevion Henderson is running back for Ohio State. A lot of people think he's going to be really the best back year one for them, and just
is there really smash. No B in that name?
Trevion? Trevion? Am I? Does it sound like a B? I don't know.
It's Trevion? My ear, Trevion? Which is very not skilled. I think we're all learning that means nothing.
Yeah, no B.
And apologies to all of the mothers on this list, by the way. Like, you name your children, very good names. It is entirely my fault. I just suck at this.
Yeah,
it's a very good, strong sounding name, but I hear a B.
Okay. This next one is going to be, this one should be way easier. Okay. So this is the QB1 coming into this class. A lot of people think he's going to be just the next best Oklahoma quarterback that just smashes automatically, but he hasn't even really done anything yet because he's a true freshman. Looked great in the spring game. Cool. But his name is Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams, quarterback of Oklahoma. So I think you got this one. I believe
it's either a K
in you.
Or a C, right?
I know,
it's
but you know, don't overthink it. Don't overthink it.
Trevor Lawrence good or not, by the way? Because since you're my college quarterback evaluator guy.
Trevor Lawrence checks out as good. Like, I think you're just stalling.
No. Like, how does Caleb stack up? Are you that confident? I'm going with K, confident. By the way. I'm going K-A-L-B-E-B because I suck.
No!
No, I was hovering over a yes, but nope, it was actually with a C. C-A-L-E-V.
You see, hit rates are all about what you're trying to hit, and I'm trying to hit 100% failure rate, personally, consider myself a winner right now.
Yeah, actually, you know, I think it can be harder sometimes to actually go over, so if you pull this off, I'll be super proud of you. I don't think you're going to get this one right either, so...
Okay.
Emeka Ebuka. Emeka Ebuka. He is a wide receiver.
I'm going to start with an E. Should I just give up right now?
Hey, you know what? You got the first letter correct. Emeka Ebuka, and he plays for Ohio State. He is one of the 5.7 million wide receivers that are like ridiculously high recruiting pedigree guys. He was the wide receiver one overall, according to the 24/7 Sports composite in this class. Probably doesn't make an impact year one because Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba, all there ahead of him, but he should be on the field some in year one.
I think Emeka, seriously, even though I don't know how to spell the name or anything else, it sounds like a name that's more familiar to me, and I think that's why I got the E right. Maybe okay. It's a little more European, Eurasian.
Second
I know.
Letter.
But
second
so
letter.
Far, I'm just counting it as a win. We got the E right.
We got the E right.
After that, the downhill slope, E-M-I-C-A is how I spelled it. I've literally got a notepad up. Like, I'm being honest. This is how I'd write it if I'd never seen it written.
Absolutely not.
No, it is E-M-E-K-A. And the last name, I'm not even going to make you do that one.
That's not so bad. C instead of K.
Yeah, that's not bad. And then the last name actually has a silent G. It's E-G-B-U-K-A. So, no, I wasn't expecting you to get that.
Oh,
one.
I wasn't even going to try. Sorry.
Yeah. No. 0-3. Let's move along. Tyler Buckner. You might get this one. You know that you probably see
T-Y-L-E-R.
Yeah, you got that first name. Last name. You know what? Yeah, we got to have some positivity in here.
That's right.
So you got Tyler right.
You were going to get your money's worth out of that sample.
I absolutely am.
And the second name was Buckner?
Buckner. And I have posted about him on Twitter quite a bit because he is my favorite quarterback in this class. He put up 56 touchdowns in a season and 1,600 rushing yards in the same season. Missed all last year because of California football being off, and he went to Notre Dame in the spring. He could have played spring ball in California, but chose to get on campus early and absolutely he looked great this spring. I think he could get on the field and start by season's end. Some people are more skeptical. Is that enough time for me stalling for you to spell Buckner correctly?
And, well, it's enough time for me to formulate an actual question, which is probably a negative EV at this point. But do you look at touchdowns? Because obviously that's a fantastic stat line, but like I'm so used to just looking over, like ignoring. But not for quarterbacks, I have no idea. Right. So, I mean, does that matter?
Not a bunch. That's just the stat that I remember. But he did
enough.
Have. But the thing is, I mean, high school passing volume in terms of yards just means nothing because so many offenses, the scales of high school offenses are way more all over the place than even in college, outside of like triple option based games. So yardage doesn't mean a whole lot. His efficiency numbers were off the charts, like 17, 18 yards per completion, you know.
Okay. That was enough time, thanks to the vamp, for me to type it and see what came out. And I'm incredibly phonetic. Like that's if you want to guess if there's
go
a freaking game out there.
Spell it out. Last name.
Wrong. Go phonetic. I wrote the words buck and then so B-U-C-K-N-E-R.
It is B-U-C-H-N-E-R. Buckner. Sorry. 0-4. I'm not sure you're going to get one at this point. And you know what? You're going to get one. But halfway point right here, Ajayi Hall.
Jay Ajayi hopefully helps me out here. Let's see. Ajayi Hall. Ajayi. No, that's not going to be right.
No,
Hall.
Just off the cuff. First instinct. Go.
A-J-A-H-I.
Go!
It is A-G-I-Y-E, Ajayi Hall, or Ajayi Hall.
He's the whole family.
He looks really good. He had an incredible spring game for Alabama. He's one of their true freshmen coming in among their, I guess, quartet of top 70 overall wide receivers in this class. Figures to be the high impact guy in year one. Could be, you know, a true freshman breakout, which would be amazing for what we love to do. So 0-5, that's okay. Kamar Wheaton on the same team, Alabama. Sixth out of 10 questions here. Kamar Wheaton.
What position?
He plays running back. He is actually the 5-star running back for Alabama, entering a room that is absolutely stacked. And they, yes, are adding another 5-star, it seems, next year in Emmanuel Henderson already. So Alabama just keeps on bringing it in with Kamar Wheaton. Spell it. Go for it.
K-A-M-A-R is how I would spell Kamar because of Kamar Akers. And Wheaton, again, it's just that backup Dallas quarterback forever. So it's W-H-E-A-T-O-N.
You know what? You got the first name wrong, but you got the last name right. So, that's a half. I'm giving you a half on that one. So you got half out of six so far. And I bet you know what? This is the one. This next one is the one you're going to get. But it's
these, by the way, again, I would like to emphasize, these are all great names. Aren't my they? Inability to spell them says only things
strong
about
names.
Me.
They sound
fantastic
like
names.
They're going to be future NFL stars, right? All of them. But
yeah,
absolutely. Especially this next one, because it's Marvin Harrison Jr.
Oh, God, do you think I could get that right?
I think you can get this one right. He's going to Ohio State. He is a top 100-ish recruit in this class. Ohio State brought in like four freshman wide receivers that were highly touted recruits. One name we've already mentioned, Emeka Ebuka, is in that group. Marvin Harrison Jr. is probably going to have to wait to get on the field, but he was looking good in the spring, so he should work into rotation stuff this year and be one of the primary go-tos maybe next year. So how do you spell Marvin Harrison Jr.?
M-A-R-V-I-N
yep.
Space.
Space. You got
right.
Space.
I'm pretty
that's
confident
good.
On that one.
Nailed it.
H-A-R-R-I-S-O-N? Harrison? That's how I
spell
Harrison.
Nailed it.
That's what I get. I get one right and I get a yeah.
You do. Okay. You got the yeah. In fact, let's just give you another
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yep, you got it.
Pardon me.
There you
sorry
go. You got it. You got it. All right.
What's
so
the equivalent of provincial in terms of the world? Because unless it sounds something vaguely like a name that would turn up in England or America, I've got, well, not America, obviously, since he's in America. But
yeah.
Unless it sounds vaguely like a person I went to school with, I suck.
Then the next couple might be tough. But we'll give it a whirl and see what happens. And stick with the K. And just give me a hint there. Stick with the K instead of a C, okay? Okay, so Kamaru Edmonds is a freshman running back for North Carolina. I like him quite a bit, but he did not come early for spring ball for North Carolina. And so he may have gotten passed in terms of the pecking order by another running back, a true freshman coming in, Caleb Hood, converted quarterback, really big-bodied feature guy to pair with Ty Chandler, who should be this year's version of Michael Carter in that offense. Michael Carter, of course, now with the Jets, who he became a real person this year.
You high on him?
No, I'm not actually.
Okay,
I did.
Me neither. I want to be, but it feels like, yeah, carry on.
Yeah, no, I want to be too. I mean, I'm sure. In fact, let's pause, because what is your take on Michael Carter? Because that he was like, pick or something in
if I can remember.
Fourth round. So, I mean, super early in day three, but he still was technically a day three pick in a bad running back class.
If I can remember back to when I was doing rookie evaluation, essentially my take on Michael Carter is he might be underrated because he was part of a committee.
Yeah.
You can't really fault a guy who was in a scheme or behind another player with another player that also has the talent. In college, that seems to be something that can happen.
Yeah.
And on his touches, he was good. He was incredibly good and had a significant enough receiving workload that we can hope he develops that or uses that in the NFL as well, which gives him a significant floor. Since then, since everyone's forgotten the pain of Keyshawn Vaughn, everyone has elevated Trey Sermon and Michael Carter into like the late first round. And I'm like, whoa, bro. Like, I don't know. I mean, all running backs have the chance to get opportunity. And again, Michael Carter looked to be really good in his touches, but efficiency is hit and miss. I have stats mm-hmm. I think obfuscate for that, but I think what I can say about Michael Carter is in that situation he was really good,
yeah,
which means I hope he can translate that into the NFL, but there you're looking at least three ifs before we get to the NFL. So I like him a lot, but not where people are valuing him right now, and that kind of sucks because it's not like I don't want him or don't like him. Even especially in that situation, since the Jets are kind of a question mark, probably still a bad team, but they've upgraded a lot of
seems
coaches
like they're, yeah,
and players in this draft, I think.
Yeah, they want to get younger. Like they're
not
in
to
a
mention
spot.
Corey Davis. I mean, if you got Corey Davis, pretty much you're set. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Absolutely. And, the Titans learned that for sure. But
so yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay, fair enough.
You do good analysis now.
No, that was actually great. I mean, like coming out of UNC, he and Javonte Williams were like the 1-2 punch there.
Yes.
Javonte stole like all the touchdowns. And so very similar efficiency numbers. Javonte had more broken tackles per touch and so on and so forth.
Right,
and
right.
He got the capital ahead of Carter. But that offense still looks super healthy, which is why Kamaru Edmonds is interesting, because he's big bodied. He had a decent receiving resume in high school, has already proven it, has a decent recruiting pedigree.
Right.
Comes into a situation where he could immediately just smash if given that Javonte Williams role in year one. So that's why he's intriguing, and that's why I'm asking you to spell his name right now.
I'm going to spell it. You want me to spell Michael Carter?
No, I think you got that one. I see you trying to cheat, though.
You got that one.
But Kamaru Edmonds.
Kamaru Edmonds, right?
Yes.
Kamaro space Edmonds.
Now, question for you.
Uses it in a sentence.
Country of origin. Did you say one R or two R's in Kamaru?
I use one R.
One R?
To hold myself to the truth tree.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, so close. Dude, it was two R's. That was so close. I'm counting that as a half. That's another half. So you're up to two. It's like one half, a full one, and then another half. I'm just giving you.
My Twitter feed would be ecstatic if I was only that far away on most words.
No,
to be honest, one hour away, they would be able to read it.
They'd be like, oh, I know who that is. Yeah, I got it totally tracking. All right, this is a funky spelling of this first name, but what a quarterback name, by the way. The dude's name is Jackson Dart. Quarterback throws darts, man. Like, that's the best quarterback name, Jackson Dart.
I really hope he's good.
Like, he
instantly
should be.
I'm rooting for him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mr. Dot.
Yeah, he is one of two stud true freshman quarterbacks coming into, I guess, eventually replace Keaton Slovis out at USC. The other one is Miller Moss, kind of from a blue blood high school football program. Jackson Dart, kind of a late bloomer and late riser in the process, but everyone is now on Jackson Dart because of his ridiculous 7-7 streak and just kind of rise through the ranks. But he should be in the NFL draft discussion after really his sophomore year, because Keaton Slovis is probably going to keep the reins this year, but he's going in pick 20 to 25 range in most of my drafts in terms of true freshmen only. But Jackson Dart, USC, go for it.
I know you thought this would be like a 5-minute segment, and I've turned it into an entire podcast, and I apologize.
This is
but
fantastic.
I do have a question about Javonte Williams later, if you could remind me, because I'll forget. And also, Jackson Dart. Jackson space Dart.
See another one. It's Jackson. Yeah. Why do they? I don't know why people do that, but they're just like, you know, I could take this name and I could spell it normally, or I could just mess it up. And
no. Honestly, I respect that because the X is an underused letter. It's a pretty cool letter. It's
that's
got
true.
A good sound. You don't see it a lot.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of use for it outside of xylophone.
Yeah,
we should use it more often.
Jackson Smith and Jigba uses an X as well. So maybe that's just a thing now. But yeah, last spelling, and then we'll move on to some production metrics and basically how to apply that in our process with some of these incoming rookies. And
I'm rubbing off on you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. And some college players. So this one, think about how someone from Louisiana would spell this first name, and we'll see if you can actually get it correct. That's a big hint, but you don't watch college football, so I don't know. We'll see. So his name is Bo Collins. He's a wide receiver, true freshman at Clemson. And what's cool about him is he actually went to high school with DJ Uiagalelei, and thank God I didn't make you spell that. But DJ Uiagalelei, who is the quarterback now at Clemson, played high school ball and just absolutely targeted the heck out of Bo Collins at St. John Bosco out in California. Now they will be rejoined together. Will be fun to see if they actually have that connection immediately, a la, you know, like JT Daniels and Amon-Ra St. Brown did back with USC and JT Daniels' first year there.
I spell it B-O-O.
B-O-O? Bo. That's like Boo Collins.
I know, but that's what came out. Okay, I'm just
okay.
Being honest. And
okay,
then
that's fair. That's fair.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so it's B-E.
Bo, is it B-A-E?
It is B-E-A-U-X.
Okay.
Bo Collins.
No, that's a much more logical spelling. I just,
That's okay. And that ends
big
the
fan of Louisiana.
True freshman spelling bee with Peter Howard. But that was a lot of fun. Thanks for indulging me. That was fun.
Okay.
Again, the segment, thanks to, brought to you by Ryan McDowell. He had the idea there for this. So thank you for that, Ryan. Really, really appreciate the assist. But on to some production metrics because...
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah.
That one, buddy.
Yes, Peter is incredibly grateful. And I am...
You did get me on Travis's podcast, actually. I do.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So you got two out of ten. A half, another, a full one, and then another half. We'll call it 2 out of 10. That's all good. It's not bad. I'm just glad you got Marvin Harrison Jr. That would have been bad, but
that would have been pretty bad.
Yeah. All right. So production metrics, though, because you are the king of this. I mean, I've talked with you about this stuff a lot. No one is perfect in this area and in predicting the future. If we were, we would probably be doing that full time for an NFL team. But we're getting better. We're learning more together. You dive into these production metrics and what which ones mean the most. I want to get into some discussion as to how you would apply that. But just to set things up for those that aren't familiar with your process and kind of how you approach things with production metrics, I'm just going to give you the floor here to kind of set things up and how you build that into your rookie analysis.
What I've come to understand about production metrics is that productive players are more likely to be good in the NFL, but productive players don't necessarily turn out to be good in the NFL. Now, there is some variation in that there are a lot of things that come into play that literally players have no effect around, and that mostly affects, well, frankly, running backs. Running backs don't, no matter how good they are, they can't work their way onto the field. Now, I want to put an asterisk on that because we're talking about in the neutral normal case. If you are Saquon Barkley, who I honestly believe has talent just dripping off of his fingers, although someone on Twitter recently said he's physically talented, but he lacks some of the nuanced talent, I guess. It doesn't seem to matter. Or just go to whoever your default good running back is, LaDainian Tomlinson. Maybe that guy can work his way onto the field. Outside of that, I really think looking at the history of it, you have to admit a lot has to do with coaching preferences and decisions, and that leads to scheme and strength of schedule and positional roles. Running backs have less control over that. So if you are, for example, Danny Woodhead, constantly struggling to work your way up the depth chart, it may take you a while to find a team that happens into a situation where you can display, hey, I have been better than most players on most depth charts I have actually been on, and then they recognize it, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Arian Foster got lucky. For me, he's one of the most talented running backs who ever played the position. I didn't know I was going to go here. I think it's pretty clear from my speech pattern. I just kind of wing it. But I really love Arian Foster, mostly because I love undrafted free agents.
Yeah,
but
man.
Very few have the opportunity to display that skill. This is why I was such a big fan of James Robinson last year. And I can also throw out other numbers to justify how good he is. But you can also throw out numbers to compare him to Marlon Mack, as again, someone did to me the other day, and it was highly insulting as someone who has been a fan of both players, obviously. Yeah. But all this is to say, if you're very, 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 very good, you are still more limited than most other positions. I think in receiving positions, tight end, at wide receiver, and even at quarterback, to some extent, although they are more limited than wide receiver, you can display enough ability that a coach or a scheme or a team or a situation has relatively little choice but to let you on the field because they need more wide receivers, they need more tight ends on the field at any one time. You only need one quarterback on the field at any one time, except for that one time they tried rotating them, and you know,
bad idea. They still do that, by the way, in college, like where all the fake people live. It's so obnoxious. Like when schemes and coaches, like Arkansas State does this to this day, like willingly, they'll alternate drives. And it's the most obnoxious thing. There's no tactical advantage. There's no reason to do that. There's clearly a superior passer and rusher. And they just keep on trotting out this really inefficient passer along with this other guy named Lane Hatcher, who's actually good by every number that matters. So it's really frustrating, but you're absolutely right. And I actually found some of the same thing in terms of like what translates to actual future draft capital when looking at college running backs and specifically transfer running backs that struggle to, I guess, prove their worth enough to get on the field enough, because there's, like you said, only one that's going to be on the field at all times. And even the ones that just hit recently, like Antonio Gibson, he never worked into a feature back role. It's really hard because there's just not enough snaps to go around for transfer running backs to actually hit in the NFL. And I mean, outside of Alvin Kamara and Antonio Gibson, we really don't have any recent examples that were drafted since like 2010 outside of maybe one other. But so there's just, it's really infrequent. Like even when they do get capital, like Keyshawn Vaughn, he was a trap. So it's just, it's really hard to assess running back from a statistics standpoint, because a lot of it is out of their control, and there's only ever one on the field. Like, that is one of the more difficult positions to assess.
Splits suck. Also, an underlining, like, if you're telling me a player is good because of three games, yeah, I'm just probably going to make fun of you. Because it could be true, but there is no history to back you up, and I like being kind of a dick. And I realize you're probably gonna have to bleep me because I'm after work and like I'm just having fun. But it's not that I don't, and the other thing is I want all of these players to go good, go well. I want them all to break out and they can't. Yeah. I want that out there because I spend most of my time pointing out players that shouldn't hit, because I think it's a lot easier to point out players that were overdrafted or underproductive than it is to point to players that were productive that have fallen in the draft, because it happens relatively rarely, because the NFL's got a multi-million dollar complex working on this problem with people a lot smarter than me. So the Stephon Diggs, the T.Y. Hiltons, they are rarer. Brian Edwards last year, I still have hope, but he honestly was, he looked like he was underdrafted in a similar manner. Yeah. You're going to get more of those disappointments. It's a lot easier to point out players that they're higher on because there is a lot of bias in that opportunity metric. Like with running back, I mean, a coach can just not put you on the field at running back. At wide receiver, it's a lot more difficult, but they can draft you differently. And so you can overdraft a Laquon Treadmore. And I see you, Riley Reed. I know you're out there, and I know you have proof that he was good in college. Same with Henry Ruggs. I can see why they were good in college, but I can to also show you how they don't compare to past players that went on to be good in the NFL based on what they did in college with metrics, stats that are just for the situation they were playing in. They just look underproductive. And yeah, I've actually spent some time today thinking about this because I'm constantly rethinking it. You've got to learn what words mean, because I get really frustrated by the word outlier. I think there are relatively few outliers.
Because, oh, definitely.
The way I was thinking about it today is an outlier is someone that doesn't fit a pattern, not someone that fits a pattern that you are not paying attention to. Mm-hmm. So the fact that smaller wide receivers break out less often and therefore are outliers, that's just you not doing your research. I'm sorry. I know there are a lot of statisticians out there. I literally got into a long conversation. I mean, he was immensely smarter than me. You're just looking at the one thing without looking at the thing that players actually have in common. I don't know how I can bend you around to thinking that way.
Yeah.
Because you're smarter than me, and he definitely showed a trend. But players who are good in the NFL are productive in college. It's pretty much 100% hit rate.
That's
no matter what their size.
Period.
Now, there are lots that were productive in college that didn't hit, but those who are good in the NFL were good in college.
Absolutely.
And to me, that's the pattern. So outliers really only apply to wide receivers for two, like in the history, I can find three or four. That's Michael Thomas. To me, he's an outlier. He was not productive when adjusted for his situation in any way I can find, at least. Like he was just not looking good, but he was drafted to Drew Brees in the first round. Even I selected him somewhere. I mean, who's going to say no to that? And Terry McLaurin from the same team. So maybe we have a team problem in the recent era. So outliers to me are the ones that fit the most common pattern.
And there are outliers being fewer wide receivers. The non-productive successful wide receivers. Those are the outliers.
And see, I don't count Tyreek Hill because he played utility player in college. Like, sort your designations out there, Debbie man. Could you please call these running back to wide receivers? Those are the only ones I recognize. Okay?
And honestly, he got kicked off a team and it's a weird situation.
Off-field problems. And he was drafted to a team that literally was running an open competition for who could be a wide receiver there. And so they were invested in actually getting someone that was lower drafted opportunity if they could break out, and teaching a player that really never played wide receiver before, wide receiver, and really giving him an open competition to work. And it was a relatively rare occurrence. So I don't consider him an outlier because you can't, like someone that has no data can't be an outlier. He's just more of an anomaly. And not that I don't want to look for that. And the fact that he was an athletic freak and still is, and also many other things that are much more negative specific to him. But like, I don't want to ignore that, but I don't think he was good in the NFL because he was an athletic freak. I think he found a situation where they would try to develop him, which is really rare in the NFL. The idea of teams going to develop a player.
Yeah, like they pretty do it well.
If they've got you in the NFL, they expect you to do your job. It's all Bill Belichick all the way down. Yeah. And if you can't, you can't. Anyway, this has been a long underlying, but I think I've pretty much stipulated it. Wide receiver, you need to be productive everywhere, but with running back, I'm willing to make a few more exceptions.
Yeah.
Tight end, just forget it. Just go look for big athletic freaks. Like, and that's just because we have so few like serious hits, like George Kittle, like Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham. Like, there's just not enough to make a pattern out of. The pattern is they all look weird. So, like, I don't know what to tell you
No,
about
seriously,
that.
That's accurate,
If it was
though.
A perfect profile, it would be Kyle Pitts. And I would be a lot more in on that if any of the Rob Gronkowskis and Jimmy Grahams had looked perfect.
Yeah.
And at quarterback, I don't know. I've tried my heart out, seriously. I literally tag you every time someone asks me a quarterback question. I'm like,
sure.
As far as I can tell, you have to be a wizard to figure this out.
You actually have to be magical or know how to use the force, to get the quarterbacks right every year. But no, seriously, though, it's tough.
There is some, actually, this offseason. Sorry, Travis, I keep going on. But this offseason, I actually found that in your last year at tight end, if you produce over expected in that situation for that conference, whatever, all the other caveats, in yards per team attempt, that is a significant ranker and modifier of players who are drafted into the NFL. Like, I don't know if it's just noise, because again, there are so few players who are actually.
I'm glad you bring that up, though. Yards per team pass
attempt.
That
was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you and I have talked about yards per team pass attempt and a way to kind of talk about a player's ability. It does a great job of measuring a player's ability to carry some volume and then maintaining efficiency in that volume. And yards per team pass attempt, like, for wide receivers and tight ends. Translates in terms of having some statistical signal in projecting future NFL success. And you don't have to dress it up. You don't have to adjust it. You don't have to make it pretty. It's already there by itself. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It is receiving yards, per team pass attempt. It's exactly what it sounds like. So it's super easy to measure too, which is.
That's kind of why I love it.
Yeah.
Because it's simple. You do not need to be behind paywall. And it's. Like, just you mentioned, I've got a small Twitter following and I grind this, but I'm really just a guy on Twitter. That's why I introduced myself. And I love that metric because, like, you don't have to be. RotoViz is amazing, by the way. I'm behind that paywall thanks to my very few Patreons. And I love those databases. Mine barely compare because they have so much utility to them and so much depth and so many useful tools, whereas mine's just a collection of stats. But when you're just a grinder like me, just someone playing fantasy football that doesn't have particular skill at any of this stuff, yards per team pass attempt attracts you because you just need team pass attempts and their yards.
Yeah.
And it's so simplistic, and I kind of love the simple stuff.
Oh, yeah, me too. And anything I can convert simply and then explain in a simple way to somebody else is just the best. Like, I mean, and that's why I think we all gravitate towards those metrics that are simple. And there's a lot of simple ones that apply to wide receivers and production more so than any other position. I think when it comes to actually having an easily measurable statistical impact on their future that we have come to predict and we've got enough data on that. And I think with tight ends, you're onto something there with yards per team pass attempt as well. Running backs, though, if there is a singular stat that you want to look for your guys, do you have one that you kind of attach yourself to or look for? Is it like running back dominator? Is it receiving yard market share? Is it breakaway percentage? Is it broken tackle percentage? Is there anything like that for running backs that you kind of gravitate towards?
Yeah, I actually did a video for my YouTube channel, which you should all go check. No, I just can't do that kind of stuff. But I get asked all the time, like, what's the thing I'm meant to be looking at? And the best way is to, one, listen to Travis, and two, just run your eyes over stats you think or you find common to other running backs. But if I am pushed outside of models and everything else, it is that last year yards per team attempt rather than pass attempt, interestingly enough, at college, above or below conference. and I look at their last year specifically, and again, that's just because Jimmy Graham, Rob Gronkowski, so many of them basically played 1 year that it prefers their last year. But you can look at their best year. I think that yards per team attempt, especially if you look at it within that conference,
now,
I don't think it makes a big adjustment.
Is that rushing yards?
Considering
rushing yards or yards from scrimmage?
Good question. I look at all yards.
Okay, all yards from scrimmage. Statistic.
Yeah, like I include that. And to be fair, Anthony Miko has constantly pushed the idea of adjusting the value of the receiving yards, and I recently included that in the database, and it makes sense.
Yeah, like weighting more with the receiving yards than you do touchdowns if you're looking at like players' dominator rating or something like that in terms of your grade on a wide receiver. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with running backs, I look at their best year, and the easiest way to think about that is, like, if you're behind Saquon Barkley, it's okay to suck.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I mean, you're not going to have crazy stats because there's only one running back.
When he's gone and you have your year, that's the year you look at. So look at their best year and yards per team attempt. I do like to look at the conference thing, but you definitely don't have, because that requires, you know, knowing the conference average.
Sure.
But yeah, that yards per team attempt in their best year, if I'm just going to look at one thing.
Sure. Before we close the show out with that kind of exercise of application of some of these metrics that we've been outlining, I do want to mention, I've been looking more at peak quarterback production too, because what we've seen over the years is actually some pretty high success from transfer quarterbacks, unlike running backs and wide receivers are getting there. But we're seeing these one-year wonder quarterbacks or even guys that kind of take a while to break out because they sat behind somebody else for 2 years. They get thrown into the fire in their first starting year and then they blow up like Zach Wilson did last year. Or Mac right. Jones blows up after Tua Tagovailoa goes pro. And
Tua is still good, by the way, just checking.
I think so. I think he is. He'll still hit. Okay. And so I look at peak production and I look at peak rushing yard production and mix that with a kind of custom passing efficiency metric that I built, which is not easy to explain, sadly, but essentially it adjusts for certain schematic variables that boost efficiency to try to find the truly efficient passers. And then mixing that with rushing yard market share, that's what I found to be the most sticky in terms of predicting future draft capital, which especially in recent classes, draft capital is the highest indicator of future success for quarterbacks. You're not finding a ton of Tom Brady's in the later rounds finding success in the future, well, in the NFL for that long. So if you can predict capital,
indicator for sure.
Yes, high ceiling indicator and sustained success. I mean, we have misses every single year, but the mix of that custom passing efficiency metric that I actually just wrote up on RotoViz, you can go find it on RotoViz now, but it mixes in adjusted yards per attempt over expected, essentially, given right. some schematic variables with rushing yard market share, percentage of the team's rushing yards. And all you need to do to have a pretty good chance at early first round capital is be a 90th percentile passer in terms of efficiency and have at least 5% or more of your team's rushing yards in your peak season as a passer. If you check those two boxes, the hit rate is ridiculous. And the true like all pro difference makers in the modern NFL that kind of check the 15% rushing yard market share mark and that 90th percentile passing efficiency, it gets you a list of guys like Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, and Deshaun Watson. It's really fun. I'm hoping to continue to hone in on the truth and find some more consistency upon a larger sample, but getting there with quarterback.
That's interesting. When Josh Holmes might deign to look at college statistics for a minute, because it's really not something he delves into a lot. That's the air yards guy is probably how he's best known. That's what he ended up focusing on at quarterback. He was like, you need to be accurate and productive. And that's essentially his SIPO metric. That's specifically what he focused on, how accurate you are compared to where you're playing, the conference level.
Yep. And rather than me adjusting for conference level, I kind of do in a way, because I just understand that the G5 guys that do break this and don't actually always get the capital are generally smaller conference type of play. But the guys that check the right boxes, basically adjusting for scheme rather than competition level or exactly the depth of target, but adjusting for things like play action percentage and things like that artificially boost efficiency. But before we dive into how to apply some of this nerdy nonsense, just a word from our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I just want to take a second to thank you for tuning in to today's show. My name is Colin Kelly, co-host of the Road of His Overtime podcast, along with the great Sean Siegel. We do appreciate each and every listener, and as a thank you to each of you, you can get yourself a 10% discount to a Road of His NFL pass. We're heading at full speed towards the season. Make sure you're ready. Get yourself access to all the content and tools up on the Road of His website. All you have to do is add the code RVRadio2021 at checkout to get yourself that 10% discount. Now let's go and dominate those fantasy leagues in 2021.
All right, so we talked about some of the most nerdy metrics that can mean something in predicting future NFL success. We had the first annual True Freshman Spelling Bee with Peter Howard. We'll have to do that again in the future. But to round things out down the stretch here, let's talk some application. Let's look at player A and player B and compare and figure out who we would actually select as a prospect at the same position. So some of these guys will be college. Some of these guys will be rookies. But kicking things off, player A here, he actually is in college right now. He is returning, and he has the best peak production profile among all wide receivers in college football. In my adjusted production index that I do for RotoViz every year, if he entered the NFL draft today, he would be a 78th percentile prospect. So even if he does nothing this year, he would already be looking pretty good. He has a peak 47% dominator rating, almost 3 yards per team pass attempt. An average for drafted wide receivers is like 2.5 or so. And an above average touchdowns per team pass attempt mark as well. But the thing is with him, he kind of posted those crazy numbers later in his career, in year 4 out of high school. Had a red shirt early on, delayed his breakout and things like that. There's some context, but that's player A. Player B, peak profile around the 63rd percentile, coming in only around a 31% adjusted dominator. But his yards per team pass attempt was higher, around 3.2. And slightly higher in the touchdown category as well. And he broke out as a sophomore rather than later on in his career. So which player would you prefer, Peter, if you were just using your process, player A or player B?
When you say breakout year, are you talking about the 30% threshold?
Yes, sir. Bonus points if you can guess who these players are.
Good question. I could search my database, but I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
I just need a refresher because I'm very slow-minded, as you know. What did you say the yards per team pass attempt was, player A and B?
2.98 for player A and 3.21, actually, for player B.
And the second one broke out a little later, right?
Second one actually broke out a little bit earlier.
Yep. I missed. Again, that's why I have to clarify.
No, it's good.
Yeah, I'm going to take the earlier breakout, even if he's slightly muted in yards per team pass attempt. So
dude,
that would be player A, right?
Glad you said that. So player B is Garrett Wilson, the one that you said he did break out earlier. Garrett Wilson, Ohio State, looks to be perhaps the wide receiver one in next year's NFL draft. Player A looks great. Last year he did anyway. Jakari Roberson of Wake Forest, somebody who's probably going to have, you know, 150 plus targets this year because the only viable wide receiver next to him is going to miss the entire season. So he could round out his production profile and have something crazy, 80 or 90th percentile peak profile. But it's, you know, it's going to come in his fifth season out of high school. And he'll be
not care.
Yeah, yes, which basically means nothing, which you can dive into here in a second. But he's going to be 24 week one of his NFL career. That's another knock on him. But I'm glad you went with Garrett because breakout age is huge. Breaking out at a young age and registering high numbers in these metrics that we like to see, that matters a ton. But that year 4 and 5 numbers stuff just doesn't really mean much. I mean, if you measure it over a large sample, like breaking out in your fourth year or fifth year in college doesn't really mean much, does it?
No, I would say you can make some adjustments to that. Like Calvin Ridley, for example. Calvin Ridley didn't play till late, and so it's hard to adjust. You don't know what he would have done in the most predictive, most useful years, but you can't exactly give him a negative grade for years he wasn't literally on the field.
Yeah.
So he started later, but he also broke out as soon as he got onto the field. This has led a lot of people to ask me, shouldn't you look at years played or years out of college? And honestly, the signal drops away if I do that. But it is fair to look at a player and say, Calvin Ridley didn't play earlier, so I can't give him a negative. But he did exceptionally well compared to that age limit when he was on the field. This is what put Calvin Ridley as a wide receiver 2 in that class for me and DJ Moore as a wide receiver 1. I had him in tier 1. Like, they were both clearly good. And honestly, long term, it looks like Calvin Ridley is the guy you wanted because DJ Moore has been exceptional in the NFL but failed to hit our production needs, top 12 in other words.
Yeah.
Whereas like Calvin Ridley broke that last year.
Yeah.
But both are clearly good. I think they actually juxtapose that dynamic really well. You want a player who does well really young more than well really old. But at the same time, if a player doesn't play till older, it's fair to look at those seasons kind of in isolation.
Yeah, and really that's what led you to select Garrett Wilson's profile because of the earlier breakout. And so that's the key.
Yeah.
That's how I would apply. Even though Jakari Roberson's peak is higher in terms of his dominator rating and his yards per team pass attempt was right near it, even though they're similar in some ways there, the age was the difference maker.
And that's the thing. None of these rank well. If you saw any of these classes by any, like, you do not like the ranking. You don't want to draft them in that way. And so they're kind of box ticky, or if you're a nerd, threshold stats.
Exactly.
And you want it as young as possible.
Yep. Well, we're not looking to necessarily always rank with these analytics. We just want to see as many boxes checked as possible. But on to the next pairing here. So player A, 3 seasons of a running back dominator over 60%. He's above average in terms of his breakaway run percentage. RotoViz loves that. We outline that in our rookie guides every year. And then his final season receiving yard market share was actually near 15% as a running back.
That's pretty good.
Yes, it is. But his efficiency numbers dipped dramatically in his final season. Player B, one of the youngest players in his entire class, and he averaged nearly 8 yards per touch in his final season. And he also posted incredible yards after contact marks. So player A, player B.
Interesting. The NFL adjusts for what they just saw in the way that we meme fantasy players doing it. Like, if you were good last year, the NFL will probably refuse to admit this, but I really do think it matters. But having said that, after 3 good years and then 2020, which everyone knows was a weird year because we were all stuck in our houses, we were very aware of it. And being a bad year, they're probably going to give him allowance. I'm leaning player A because I think being that dominant from the moment you step on the field for multiple years is really going to attract their eye. I would say, though, that player B, though, in an ordinary year, it might elevate his draft capital more. But since it's 2020, I think player A's probably got the edge there.
Nice. Well, you just selected Travis Etienne on your team over Javonte Williams. Javonte Williams, I mean, he smashed last year. He had a crazy finish to his career. Travis Etienne, I laugh when people talk about how bad his year was. Like, he still had 1,500 yards from scrimmage, guys.
So relative.
Yes. But I mean, but his efficiency did drop by like a yard and a half per touch, like overall. Like, it was not as efficient. But the quarterback wasn't, I mean, he had a quarterback change. The offensive line was objectively worse for Clemson last year than it was in previous years. So, you know, there were and then the whole pandemic thing. So there's some context. All that stuff. So I'm glad you stuck with your guns with Travis Etienne with a more complete resume. I tend to do that. And I really love his peak receiving yard market share, like accounting for 15% of the receiving yards for that offense on a really good offense that asked him to do everything. That was huge for me. And I'm still on the Travis Etienne long term being running back one. If it's not this year, I think long term out of this class, Travis Etienne's that guy.
And just to confirm, as a, you know, purely to the bone James Robinson truther, like, he just got replaced. I don't care what the coach just said.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't care how good he is. You cannot be higher on what he did last year than I am.
It's incredible.
I'm amazed. He's my hero. But, and I really think it was a bad idea, but the team went out and replaced him. I mean, that's what happened. The power to do at running back. And unless you can find a reason to think that Travis Etienne is less than we think he is from college, and again, that last year is not a good proof of it, then James Robinson's ADP is too high and Travis Etienne's is too low.
Absolutely. So I'm taking that discount, and I have taken that discount already this year.
A lot.
Yeah.
Way too much.
Yep. And so I hope I'm right.
Actually, Tim Turner on Twitter the other day did give me a reason to maybe hold on to my James Robinson love, and that was just Rashad Penny, who I got wrong for the exact same reasoning I just rolled out there.
But Rashad Penny.
Penny had a lot more reasons to doubt him than ETN.
G5.
And I just clearly stayed true to my draft logic, and I shouldn't have. Like, I like that idea that James Robinson is Chris Carson, but it just, the proof isn't in the. It's not there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want it to be true.
Yes.
Be real clear.
Would be fantastic.
ETN's probably good.
All right, next one. Got a couple quarterbacks here. Using my adjusted yards per pass attempt over expected model, both these guys actually had two seasons over the 90th percentile in terms of passing efficiency, both of them, which is super rare. Like, most even first-round guys don't often get more than one season above the 90th percentile. But they had drastically different rushing profiles. Player A actually had his peak around 13% rushing yard market share, but his efficiency wasn't as great last fall. And again, not the perfect finish from an efficiency standpoint. Player B, his rushing yards peaked just above zero, but he finished incredibly strong last year through the air. So player A, player B.
I have no idea, Travis. It's quarterback. I'm probably going to take the guy who rushes. That's my difference maker there. If they're both accurate, and I'm going to take the guy who can rush as well.
That is the correct answer every stinking time. Thank you very much for saying it. Justin Fields is the answer over one Mac Jones. And I could have done the same thing, actually, just comparing him to Zach Wilson, but I didn't want to start that fire again because I am still in the Justin Fields over Zach Wilson camp. But both Fields and Wilson eclipsed the 90th percentile passing efficiency and 5% rushing yard market share, bare minimums to be successful and fall into a good hit rate category for me. But I'm glad you went with my dude.
That's weird. Like, I got to the same result that Justin Fields is a quarterback two in this class through entirely different means, where I literally think there's wizardry involved. I think you're secretly a wizard, Travis, and you don't want to tell us.
Yeah.
But, about quarterback evaluation. Like, I seriously think you went to Hogwarts. Like, I'm considering whether that was
Cousins with Harry, actually. Yeah.
And you're, in fact, you know, who's that incredibly all-American looking dude? I forget the guy in which book it was in the Goblet of Fire. Anyway, he dies at the end. That couldn't have been you. Okay. Anyway, what was I going to say? It's just that Justin Fields was the guy through every quarterback evaluator I know, college watcher I know, and Devy watcher I know until the draft.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there was someone better after the football had finished playing. It just feels to me like we don't want to be wrong and we bet on things that seem hot a lot. And that's the only reason that Fields dropped. And to me, that's, again, I just play the market. I have no idea how good these guys are, like completely not. But I do know that everyone was set on Justin Fields until it came to take season. Like, that's the reason. Like, yeah. Wouldn't it be cool if I got this right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And that seems weird.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so I'm right there with you. But we actually had a question and a five-star review that was left from a guy named Skinman1974. Thank you very much for the five-star review. He said, Travis is my go-to for anything college football. Appreciate that. And he said, my question is, besides the big three quarterbacks, DJ Uyunglele, Spencer Rattler, and Sam Howell, who are the next tier of quarterbacks I need to have on my radar? And this next face-off will help answer that question. So I appreciate that question. So it's between two guys that are kind of below the radar, but could be big names in next year's 2022 NFL draft, rising up draft boards currently. So you may know these names already, Peter. But player A, 72nd percentile and adjusted yards over expected. And his peak rushing yard market share is 37%. That's like Lamar kind of crazy numbers. But he doesn't play in a Power 5 conference and only has 1 year on his resume currently. Now, 72nd percentile for him, passing efficiency, but great, great rushing yards there. And player B, on the contrary, 94th percentile and adjusted yards over expected. But his peak rushing yard market share is seriously negative 8%.
Okay. he took back runs.
So in college, for those that get confused with that, in college they actually count your sack yardage against you. So you know that, but not everybody listening knows that. So this guy is not very mobile.
Also, five-star review guy, there's nothing that says I am sharper than realizing that Travis is who you listen to for college. That, like, top of my list, dude. Good decision. I'm actually going for the negative 0.8% rusher here, so reverting my decision from the last one. NFL values at Power 5. It values conference rates. And again, where you're not showing a huge differential in terms of or a huge
forgot to mention, he's also not Power 5, though. Neither of these guys are Power 5.
Oh, well, you just took away my entire take. You suck.
No, that's okay. Neither are Power 5. Does that change it?
It does, because now I have no decision maker. What did you say about their passing?
72nd percentile passing, player A, but 37% rushing yard market share. Gotcha. Player B is 94th percentile efficiency in passing, negative 8% in rushing.
You just take the rushing or you take the accuracy? I'm going to take the accuracy because while rushing is the Konami code, to use Rich Harbaugh's term, if you're not accurate, you're just not good. Like, you have to be able to run the field. This is the misunderstanding about Lamar Jackson. I get that he doesn't pass much, but when he does, he's decent with it. I'm not even going to go as far. You can look at his passing through some statistics or metrics, or just watch and see that he's literally a devastating passer. I'm not even going to go that far. He was just good. He is league average or better. He is cross the Andy Dalton line in ability to pass. You have to sustain your job in the NFL, even if you rush like Lamar Jackson. This is the jump that Josh Allen made that I didn't ever think he would make. Because it's not because I don't like Josh Allen. He seems to be an amazing human being. Honestly, having the ride of his life and displaying it, he seems awesome. But there's literally Josh Allen on the list of players who elevate in accuracy. That's it. And so you have to be accurate, and then you default to rushing yards or that upside of Konami code. So what was that, player B?
Yeah, you went with player B, who was the more efficient passer, but an absolute negative in the run game. And player A is Malik Willis of Liberty. He absolutely balled out last year.
Okay.
Took Liberty to its highest heights, perhaps ever, from a football standpoint, and really should smash this year. His schedule is super easy again. He is the 1.01 consensus first overall pick in all college fantasy football drafts this year.
Wow.
Because he's going to probably put up 1,000 yards on the ground easily. And then probably, you know, just even post better efficiency numbers, maybe slightly, just because of the scheduling this year. So he's in line to get up to where he needs to be, but he's not there yet. But for me, right. I have him over player B, who is Carson Strong of Nevada, because I believe the rushing is way more important in today's NFL, and not being an absolute liability in that category, which Carson Strong absolutely is. He's a major liability. And so I think if Malik Willis does take one or two steps up and gets up to, you know, 80-something-ish percentile this year in terms of passing efficiency and has the absurd rushing, and he has a cannon just from a film standpoint. He's got the measurables with his arm strength and all that. He doesn't have the prototypical size. He's more like 6'1". Imagine like a super crazy mobile like Baker Mayfield. You know, something like that. But Malik Willis... it's just crazy mobile, crazy accurate, has the cannon, but, you know, makes bad decisions sometimes. And obviously, when you adjust for scheme, he's not there yet. So if you look
I think just to interrupt, sorry, that's, again, the value of you watching these guys as they progress. Because I'm thinking of the story has already been written, where it's much more likely that a decent passer improves slightly, just decently. Than a rusher who's so negative, like so bad, like that's a harder jump to make. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
Like, yeah, because I don't think Carson Strong's all of a sudden just gonna be like, "Hey, I'm mobile now." Like,
or at least not negative.
No, yeah, and I think he's gonna have a larger sample of schedule this year. He had a shortened schedule last year in the Mountain West. I think he has a little bit of time to kind of expose himself this year.
The Mountain West is a rough conference to prospect in.
It really is.
A lot of undrafted free agents.
It really is. It's tough. So, I mean, he's no Josh Allen. The thing is, Josh Allen didn't have the efficiency as, you know, as a passer, but he had actually like 18% or so, like rushing yard market share. Like, he was a huge threat in that regard.
It's a weird thing. Sorry, I really don't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good.
Like, everyone remembers Josh Allen as this rushing quarterback, and that's one of the reasons I didn't go in as a rookie. I was like, he's inefficient and he doesn't rush much. And then after year one, everyone was like, oh, he's Cam Newton. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What happened but there? Does no one remember?
Seriously, he was 18% of the rushing yards for Wyoming. So he actually was quite the rusher in terms of his peak years there. But his passing efficiency, like, he and Daniel Jones, like, man, they're some of the worst first round picks ever in terms of passing numbers. Like, any way you slice it, you can, like, even if you squint like in a billion different angles, he was a terrible passer in college. But he's one that anomaly, maybe not an outlier, but an anomaly that did actually, you know, improve in that way. And he did improve in his decision making. So, but he's the exception to the rule. And I mentioned this on another podcast, but the NFL is just done. They're done drafting negative guys in terms of rushing yard and production. Like, the only of the 19 quarterbacks selected in the past five drafts in the first round, the only passer that had negative rushing yards in his profile in his peak passing season, that was Josh Rosen. That didn't go very well.
That was an interesting one, right?
Yeah.
I would say, just for any of the haters out there, because I'm a confirmed past Josh Allen hater, like, it does matter to some extent that Josh Allen has never thrown to a receiver who isn't above average. John Brown, Cole Beasley, Stephon Diggs, like, all of these guys are exceptional. But as a true, I'm like a wide receiver truther, I do not think quarterbacks can make wide receivers good. I think wide receivers can help quarterbacks. But even with all that thrown in, like, I could not have been happier to be owned by Josh Allen. Who was I talking to today? I was talking to someone today, like, you're just a hater of that player. You just don't want him to succeed. And I had to point out, like, I know it's counterintuitive, but I'm just a fan.
Yeah.
And so when a player truly, like Josh Allen, truly beats expectation, you'll find no happier person than me, because I mean, I don't know these people, so I like to pretend they're all the movie versions of these people. They're like they're just an underdog coming from nowhere. Yes. Everyone hates, including me, and then they get to stuff it down my throat.
Exactly.
Stuff it in my face. That's probably more PG. Yeah.
That's pretty much the exact Josh Allen, like, story, though.
He deserves to, like, just be doing victory laps, because he was so unexpected for me, and we were so hateful. And yet he is still just this lovable, I'm happy to be here guy. I mean, he's amazing. Yeah. At this point, he's just amazing.
Absolutely. Well, dude, Peter, appreciate you coming on the show. I think we've covered enough. I was going to get into a couple other examples, but I think we already kind of hit on a lot of different angles on how to apply these numbers.
Yeah, all I positions. Think it took way too much of your time.
No, this is perfect. This is great. I'm sure the listeners enjoyed all the different angles that we kind of covered, the production profiles, and I hope they enjoyed the spelling bee as well. But listeners, you can find Peter's work again, mainly, I guess, just check him out on Twitter, because he's got like all his stuff there. Like, you can find
if
his
Patreon.
If you're
interested in any of the other stuff there, YouTube, my bio and stuff. But all that. Twitter is free. I'm happy to talk to anyone about football, and I hope you're having a good day.
Absolutely. P-A Howdy on Twitter. That is Peter Howard, one of my favorite people to talk nerdy numbers with as well. But listeners, be looking forward to more episodes here from me and from Stefan as we kind of split off, do long form and short form episodes. We'll have some crossovers as well, some special guests on this fall. I will be diving to a bunch of college, bunch of NFL, all season long. But please do leave a rate and review. It's been great to see the positive feedback in the reviews and just via direct message. And just really, I feel like I've been growing in relationship with some of the listeners this year, and it's been really cool and impactful for me just personally. So I just thank you so much for that. But listeners, look forward to many more episodes here. But until next time, you guys take care, and we cannot believe college football and NFL is seriously like a month away. But I'm excited to just hit the ground running. But you guys take care and look forward to many more episodes of the College to Canton podcast.